TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Ellen Brown, Bypassing Wall Street, a public bank for Mendocino County. This is the second half of a one-hour program on how to set up a public bank. Ellen Brown, in her most recent acclaimed books, describes the functioning of the Federal Reserve in the web of debt, and she gives a blueprint on how to set up a public bank in her 2013 book, The Public Bank Solution. She came to Mendocino County, 100 miles north of San Francisco, to meet with the people who already embarked on the path of creating such a county bank. You heard in part one of this program that a model for such a public bank exists since 1919. It's the Bank of North Dakota. Ellen Brown described how and why that bank was founded. In the second decade of the 20th century, the farmers of North Dakota were losing their land to the Wall Street bankers. The farmers organized, won an election, and passed legislation to create the bank. The bank is a DBA of the state, North Dakota doing business as the Bank of North Dakota, the BND. So all the state's assets are technically the bank's assets. Since all state revenues are deposited in it by law, the BND now has a massive capital base. Part one of this program ended with a wonderful dilemma that the BND faced. They paid a dividend of $300 million in the last decade, most of which goes back to the state treasury, and most recently did so well that they had to decide whether to lower taxes or to add more services. Maybe the biggest impact comes from the fact that the BND can make loans to fund a public works project instead of using expensive bonds. For example, the BND funded a $50 million water treatment project with a loan. Compare that to the debt crisis that affects so many towns and counties today. Ellen Brown used the example of a school district in San Diego, California. They borrowed money in capital appreciation bonds and will eventually owe nearly $1 billion, or 10 times the initial loan. Also in California, more than 400 school districts and other agencies borrowed $9 billion. That will cost taxpayers $35 billion to repay over the next 40 years. The supporters of a future Bank of Mendocino County handed out informational flyers at the meeting with Ellen Brown. They asked, "Have you ever wondered why the county stores our money in the Bank of America? Don't you think it would be prudent to take the county's money out of a private for-profit bank before they follow the example of the banks of Cyprus, which recently bailed themselves out of their bad investments by seizing assets of their depositors? Did you know that 40% of banks in the world or public banks, but there's only one in the U.S., the Bank of North Dakota? Did you know that in the economic downturn of 2008, North Dakota had no losses but a surplus and reduced property and income taxes by $400 million? End quote. Now, Ellen Brown begins by explaining that a public bank does not compete with local small banks, co-ops, or credit unions.
Rather than competing with the local banks, their model is that the local bank is the front office, sort of, that it finds the loan, finds the good loans in the area. They're responsible for making sure that the borrower is creditworthy. And then the Bank of North Dakota just comes in and participates in the loan. So what they do is they add capital and they add liquidity. So they allow the front bank, the local bank, to make a much bigger loan than they would have been able to do otherwise. and the Bank of North Dakota gets a cut of the proceeds. So it's a very safe way to do business. This argument that, well, politicians make bad businessmen, they're not politicians. They are bankers. You'll hire bankers to run your bank, and those bankers are going to work with the small community banks that have already established that they're good, solid banks and know how to make creditworthy decisions. And what they'll do is just enlarge the capacity of the smaller banks. So in North Dakota, that Bankers Association endorses the Bank of North Dakota because they like it. The small bankers like it.
What about Bank of America, Chase?
Their market share is shrinking in North Dakota. Unlike everywhere else where they're gobbling up the small banks, that North Dakota has more banks per capita than any other state in the country. And this is because rather than being what we see as socialist, it's actually what you need for a true capitalist system where you have this umbrella of credit that's available to everyone fairly and equally, and it allows the little guy to compete with those great big bullies in Wall Street. They provide cheap credit lines to the local government agencies. So in other states, including California, we have all these rainy day funds. That I actually gave a talk in Missouri to the finance officers in Missouri, I guess it was, and for some reason they invited me to talk at their retreat. And so I said, well, at that time there was all this sort of gossip about the CAFR money, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports. I don't know if you've heard this, but there's all this money tucked away in agency money and municipal money, and they all have these funds that are just sitting there drawing a teeny bit of interest, but not much at all. And it's just sitting there. And so there's this whole conspiracy theory about they own everything and they're squirreling all this money away. So I said, well, what about all these funds that, you know, why do you have all that money sitting there? And they said, well, it's actually happened that the city would run out of money like halfway through the year, and then they have to shut down the city. There's no money to pay to the employees. So the one person said, well, I set aside 40%. And another man said, oh, that's too much. He said, I set aside 25%. But so there was some difference of opinion about how much you needed in your rainy day fund. But you have all this money that's just wasted, just there just in case as insurance. But the banks themselves don't have to worry about that at all because they've got a credit line for 0.25% with all the other banks that have this massive liquidity pool. And if they run out of liquidity, they borrow from the Federal Reserve, which creates it on its books. So we want to be in that system. Yeah.
If I were to go into Wells Fargo and take out a loan, how would that compare?
Well, for one thing, in North Dakota, they didn't get into the whole securitization thing where they sell off the loans to investors. And the reason they've had to do that everywhere else is because of the capital requirement. That you have to have in capital 10% of your outstanding loans. So you've got $10 in capital, you lend out $100 in loans, you have to sit there and wait for 30 years before you can do anything else. So they would sell off the loans to investors, and then they could make another loan and another loan. So they wound up churning these loans. And then because they weren't going to hold them on their books, they didn't care whether they were good pays or not, so they got into all this no doc, liar's loan, et cetera. But in North Dakota, they keep them on their books because the Bank of North Dakota helps them with the capital requirement. And so they followed them all the way through to the end. They want you to pay off your loans, so they're much more likely to work with you to, you know, do a workout if you have trouble paying. There are quite a few benefits. They're mandated to serve the public interest. They don't speculate. They have no incentive to do all those crooked things that Wall Street does because they're just public servants. I mean, they're public employees getting a salary. They don't get anything extra for churning loans or any of those gambling type things. They have reduced banking costs because you wouldn't even necessarily have to have a building. You could just set up an office in the Treasury. You know, it's really you're just taking your public monies and turning it into a bank, doing what a bank does. You don't have to have tellers, windows, or a bunch of branches if you're not going to take consumer deposits. And one other thing they do that's just of interest, they had a couple of really big floods. Before the New Orleans flood, they had the biggest flood ever recorded in the U.S. in 1997, the Grand Forks flood. And I've read about like the New Orleans flood and the Hurricane Sandy, where you try to get insurance and the insurer would say, oh, I'm sorry, it was a different kind of wind or a different kind of rain. You know, you don't qualify under our policy. And then FEMA never showed up for a long time, or FEMA only wound up giving loans. They don't actually give money. So in North Dakota, because their mandate is to serve the public interest, they were right there. And they quickly rebuilt the city, made loans to everybody that needed it, and they did a moratorium on foreclosures for homeowners. The city was divided into two states, basically. The North Dakota part of the city was quickly rebuilt and this population stayed, and that on the other side it was looks like a disaster area for a long time and the population left. So there was a dramatic difference in the two sides of the cities. In California, I know you're more interested in the county, but I don't have all the county figures, so I'll just give the California figures just to show the possibilities here. The population of California is 37 million. And in North Dakota, because they built up this capital base since 1919, I mean, it would take a while to get there, but they have approximately $4,500 per capita deposits in the Bank of North Dakota, and they make loans, this was in 2010, they made loans of $2.8 billion. So if you extrapolated that up for California, we could have a deposit base of $166.5 billion and potential loans of $155 billion. I mean, think what you could do with that kind of money. And these are loans that you basically get interest-free. So it's credit, issuing your own credit to build what you need and to do what you need. And then for a city-owned or a county-owned bank, it takes about $20 million, or I think that is the rule, $20 million for minimum capitalization for a bank. And you could raise that either by a bond issue, as North Dakota did when they set up the Bank of North Dakota. So this is not taxes, you know. It's just you could issue, it's kind of like Liberty Bonds, you know, for the good of the county, wouldn't you like to buy some of our bank bonds? And you get a nice return, it'd be safe, and it's just something you'll pay out of your profits. Or you could do it, you could use those CAFR funds, which are money tucked away in different agencies and municipal government areas. The Treasurer's investment pool in Mendocino County has $250 million in it, of which $190 million is with Chandler Investment, earning a modest return. So you could beat that, and you could use some of that. And it's not like you're spending it. You're just moving it over. We were speaking recently it was a man on the pension fund board for San Francisco, and he said he was ready to do this public bank thing. John Avalos has been pushing for a public bank for a city-owned bank for a decade now. So this man said, we want to buy a bank. He said, we'll put up half of the money, just as an investment. You know, the cost of capitalizing a bank is less than they lose in a day, or I guess on that particular day they had lost $60 million. He said, so we'll put up $25 million. If the city will put up $25 million, we'll have a $50 million capitalized bank. And he was all set to do it. So it could be done. You know, you could get money from your pension funds. You could get it. You may have to change some rules, but if you're a charter city, I think you're allowed to do that. And then there's the constitutional issue. The California Constitution, most state constitutions say something like, public funds shall not be lent for private purposes. Now, that has been construed to mean that you can't have a publicly owned bank, as if putting your money in that bank and then the bank will lend out the public funds, and that's not allowed. But if that's really what it means, when you put your funds in Bank of America, they do the very same thing. They're going to lend it out. Either they're lending out public funds, or they've got the money, they own the money, and you've got an IOU. which is, that's what the law is, that when you put your money on deposit in a bank, you've lent money to the bank, and the bank owns the money now. So as soon as you put your money into Bank of America, you've lent them money, the same as putting it in your own public bank. So I don't think that law makes sense, but I know there was, somebody was mentioning a legal opinion that went on for, I don't know, it was a very long legal opinion saying the reverse. I mean, there seems to be this concern. So the San Francisco Deputy City Attorney came out with this letter opinion saying that it wasn't a problem if you're a charter city or a charter county. So I'll read it. He said, this is Thomas J. Owen, San Francisco Deputy City Attorney. A court would likely conclude that California Government Code Section 23007 does not cover San Francisco because the city is a chartered city and county. Similarly, a court would likely conclude that Article 16, Section 6 of the state constitution, which limits the power of the state legislature to give or lend the credit of cities or counties, does not apply to the city. A court would likely then determine that neither those laws nor the general limitations on expending city funds for a municipal purpose bar the city from establishing a municipal bank. A court would likely conclude that the city may own stock in a municipal bank and spend city money to support the bank's operation if the city appropriated funds for that purpose and the operation of the bank served a legitimate municipal purpose. So that seems pretty clear. We now have 20 U.S. states that have introduced legislation of one sort or another for a state-owned bank. California was one of them, and it had a bill that passed both houses of the legislature, but Jerry Brown didn't sign it. And his argument was that we already had a banking committee and we had too many committees and we didn't need another one and that we could do this in-house. But of course, we haven't heard any more about it since then. But it did pass both houses of the legislature, which is pretty remarkable. People say, well, North Dakota is got oil. It's a small state. They set it up 100 years ago. It's agricultural. It's not like us. You know, we could, even though they did it, we can't do it. So for that reason, I wrote my book, The Public Bank Solution, where I look globally and historically at other public banking models. Well, it turns out, I was shocked to see myself, that 40% of banks globally are publicly owned. These are largely in the BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, which house 40% of the global population and which all escaped the credit crisis. Russia went down for a little bit, but they came back up. So there have been two recent banking crises globally, the 2008 one and then the 1998 one, the Asian crisis. And after both of those, public banking has experienced a resurgence. And this is for several reasons, but one is that they're safer. I just wrote an article about Costa Rica. 80% of deposits in Costa Rica are in publicly owned banks. The IMF has come in and the U.S. has come in and tried to lean on them to privatize their banks, and that people just, they want their public banks because they're very safe. The little private banks keep going bankrupt and the people lose their money. And so they've all rushed to these public banks. The public banking system was set up in 1949 when there was a revolution. There was a civil war, and the winner of the civil war knew that if he didn't, they were, at that time, Costa Rica was desperately poor. It was the poorest country in the region. And this rich coast is what Costa Rica means. It was a misnomer, apparently, when they saw the women with wearing gold and they thought there was gold there, but there wasn't. There was nothing there to speak of. So in 1949, the winner of the Civil War, he nationalized many industries, and one of them was the banking industry. And this worked really well. He started funding everything in sight. They had got a lot of money for the government. I mean, it seems to me that if you want to escape paying taxes, what you need to do is allow your government to make some money. And one really viable business they could go into right off the top is banking. So that's what they did, and there was an attempted, I think there were two attempted coups and one attempted assassination, partly from the military, so he just got rid of the military. Well, you can see right there how much money that would save if you didn't have a, I mean, for us, it would save like half our tax bill. So then he had all this extra money that he could put into, they still have an excellent medical system, covers everybody, excellent education system that covers everybody. And they were rated something like the happiest country in the world, like happiest people in the world. Anyway, the public banks lend countercyclically. They lend when other banks are pulling in. When they're afraid to lend, you can see charts where as the private banking lending shrinks, the public banking lending goes the other way. And there are actually studies that show that they're less corrupt. People think, well, the government will be corrupt, you know, so it'll be a corrupt bank. But public banks are actually less corrupt. It's harder to be corrupt in a public bank. You've got a mandate to serve the public. If you set right in, put right in your charter that you want full accountability, full transparency, and a mandate to serve the public, obviously that bank is going to be more accountable and more transparent than a Wall Street bank, which doesn't have such a mandate. They're also more efficient, and they're also, surprisingly, slightly more profitable, which is surprising because they're not actually trying to be profitable. I mean, they're trying to serve the public. So when the government owns the bank, the government guarantees are built in. You don't have to worry about FDIC insurance. The government is the bank, so they obviously back the bank. Credit goes where it's needed by the public and the community. Interest returns to the public, and you have a sustainable system where the bank profits feed the economy rather than feeding off it. And I'm president of the Public Banking Institute, and we have a lot of information on our website about public banking and about different ways you can tap in, et cetera. And these are my two books on the subject, and my blog is at ellenbrown.com, and I've got over 200 articles on banking-related subjects there that I wrote, and a bunch of interviews. So that's all.
That was Ellen Brown. She spoke in December 2013 in Mendocino County, California. Ellen Brown is the author of The Public Bank Solution, a global survey of the current state of public banking and an intriguing history of its venerable past. It also covers public banking models spawned by depression and war, making clear all along how a matter so obscure to many, the management of the financial system and the money supply, can affect every aspect of our lives. The economist of sustainable development and author Hazel Henderson wrote the foreword to The Public Bank Solution. She said, "This book is about understanding the politics of money creation, credit allocation, and how democracies can and must regain control over today's global casino." Ellen Brown mentioned in passing San Francisco supervisor John Avalos. He's one of the strong proponents of a public bank for San Francisco. In turn, the efforts of San Francisco to set up a public bank can be exemplary for other cities, towns, or counties in California and beyond. John Avalos spoke at the June 2013 Public Banking Conference. It was held at the Dominican University in San Rafael, California. Avalos had just received a legal opinion by San Francisco Deputy City Attorney Thomas J. Owen. He wrote that restrictions on the operation of a public bank would not affect San Francisco. Here is some of what Supervisor Avalos said.
Just this last couple months, we got great news from the city attorney on our pushback on what their opinion about whether we could actually do municipal banking in San Francisco. And they found that because we're a chartered city, that we actually have the ability to actually move forward with an idea of using our public dollars in a banking institution. I believe the sky's the limit. And it's not just San Francisco. Other chartered cities as well, like Los Angeles, the city of Oakland, the city of Santa Rosa, and about 100 other chartered cities are able to do this as well. And so the question is, how do we, you know, build it? How do we get the money into a financial institution that's publicly owned? And what does it do? Our goals around creating a municipal bank, ultimately, we want to be able to fund economic development projects, affordable housing projects. We also have an effort to build municipal power in San Francisco, and a bank could be a way to actually move that forward as well. We also want to look at our own municipal bond financing based on the LIBOR experience that a lot of municipalities have had around the country. How can we actually create our own financial tools so we're not reliant on the sketchy financial institutions that come out of Wall Street? We want to also be able to support a lot of households that are dealing with the mortgage crisis, especially households in my district where defaults are pretty high, that we could actually have our own ways of supporting households, that we can actually maintain our wealth in our single-family homes, our working-class communities. Our wealth is often in our homes, so how can we use our financial institution, our public finance institution, to help households prevent foreclosures? We also want to look at small loans that could be available for small businesses and make sure that we are increasing the capacity of credit unions and community development financial institutions in San Francisco. And overall, we want to be able to create alternative economic systems, ones that can be publicly owned and self-reliant and offer greater self-determination for the people of the city, and also be an example for cities around the country and learn from other cities around the country how we can actually move forward and create our own financial institutions that will be publicly owned and be managed by public and actually really be based on democratic principles. And so we're really excited about what we're moving forward with that.
That was applause for John Avalos, member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. He spoke on June 3rd, 2013 at the Public Banking Conference. That conference was organized by the Public Banking Institute. This was a snapshot of the status of public banking at the beginning of 2014. You can follow the unfolding news and get information on how to set up a public bank on the website of the Public Banking Institute at publicbankinginstitute.org. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. There you can also subscribe to free weekly podcasts. On tucradio.org, you can also order a CD or a DVD of this talk by Ellen Brown. Or you can call 1-707-463-2654, and I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your CD or DVD order and your donation on TUC's website keeps this program on the air. That's tucradio.org or 707-463-2654 for more information. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.